All right, back here on the Connor Happer Show on 1620 The Zone. We are joined now by Steve Sipple from Lincoln Journal Star. Good afternoon, Sipple.
Hey, Happer.
Hey.
How's your new gig?
Almost 3 weeks in, Sipple. Just got to get through this interview with you.
Well, that shouldn't be a problem.
No. I mean, I was wondering if we were going to get a hold of you. I figured you'd be all the way into season four of Ozark by now.
No, I'm not into it at all. I will be tonight, I hope. Oh, no, not I hope. I will be tonight. But no, I haven't even thought that much about it. It's been pretty busy.
You told me a couple weeks ago. How many rewatches of the first three seasons have you now gone through?
Three full rewatch.
I overshot it before, but yeah, three is still a lot. So you're as ready as you could be.
Yeah, I'm really ready. I'm looking forward to diving back in hard, getting that, kind of getting the Marty Bird vibe, which you got to have anyway. Nothing really shakes you, or if it does, you don't show it. And this show is pretty informative in some ways. And one is that, you know, if you watch Marty closely, nothing that happens really gets him too out of whack. It's just, you know, it's on to the next problem. Then there's another problem, and you have to solve that. And that's kind of the way, that's kind of a metaphor for life. And what Marty Bird taught me is not to get too shook up about anything.
Yeah, whether you are a drug kingpin, or a business owner, or a radio show host, or a columnist.
Yeah, money launderer.
Or money launderer.
Marty's a high-level money launderer.
You are on to the next thing. There is a good lesson there. You're right, Sipple.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Couple things here. Tough to not notice coaches being, and one coach in particular, Mickey Joseph, being around metro area schools today. And they have a big junior day coming in this weekend. I was talking about this with a couple other people earlier. Just, it feels like there's somewhat of a fresh air right now that Nebraska football desperately needed, that I wasn't sure a few weeks ago, and especially after the season ended, that would come. But here we are, and we've already kind of tricked ourselves into being somewhat optimistic in January. Not that you are, but just it feels like there's a fresh air.
And I think that when you make, I think one of the reasons Scott Frost made changes was to create new energy, and there's new voices, and they're in the program. Mickey's a powerful voice, and so is Whipple, and so is Donovan, each in their own way. And I don't know as much about Applewhite, the new running backs coach, but yeah, Trev talked about that the other day. Trev Alberts is that a lot of, I mean, listen, you can't just keep doing what you're doing if you're 10 and 28, right? I think it's incumbent on you to make some changes, and they have, you know, they've made some significant ones. And is kind of what should be happening to a program that struggled at the level it has.
I agree. And this is something I was just talking about before you came on here. They have, and maybe this is different, you can add context to this from administrations of the past. They have administrative support here, you know, where they're not going to be, Trev Alberts isn't going to be, you know, working against anybody. They're giving them all the ammo. That way, if it doesn't work out, you could say, well, you know, there was kind of no excuses at the end of it.
Yeah, I know. I think that's true. I think I'm pretty convinced that's the case. I do think that Trev, I think there has to be a healthy distance between, you know, a boss and you know, his underling. And I do think there's a healthy distance between Trev and Scott. Now, here's the deal. What we haven't seen in the past is fairness, in my judgment.
That's right. Yes, exactly.
And I think Trev Alberts will be fair. that's what, if you're a Nebraska fan, you hope so. And this, when I say fair, an evaluation of the current regime led by Scott Frost. And yeah, I mean, I think that there's no doubt. I don't think there's any doubt that Trevis helped in this process. Now, having said that, one way of helping is come back and let Scott do his thing. And that, you know, that's how I want my boss to operate. That's what I prefer. Not everybody does, but I think Scott does. And, you know, Trevis talked about this new sort of iteration of Scott's role as, you know, becoming more of a CEO. So I think if they're going to say that, you know, in November, then that needs to be the case in December. And I think you saw that. So, yeah, it's all been orderly. It's all been orderly, I'd say. And it's all made sense. It hasn't been perfect, but it's been pretty close to it.
What have been your impressions of you know, Applewhite? Let's start with him, and he's kind of the new one in here. Mixing in with the new staff, it feels like, you know, bringing him in, a guy with some experience in Texas, is not a small thing here. What's kind of been your impression of him so far?
Oh, I think that, look, I mean, what I've, you know, just talking to a couple of guys on the staff, that he fits the, you know, I always hesitate to use the word culture, but I do think he fits their culture. This is not necessarily number one or two or three on the list of needs, but he's a good guy. He's a nice guy, and they like him. And he's, you know, I think he's, you know, I don't think you need all. I think I would characterize some guys as sort of pains in the ass, and I think that's needed on a staff. Charlie McBride could be a pain in the ass. And I wouldn't say that's the case with Applewhite. And that's okay. I mean, I think there's a good mix. I think there's a couple guys on the staff I might characterize like that, as, you know, and being in the Charlie McBride mold. Here's what I really like about Applewhite. He's had to recruit to Outpost. He's had to, you know, he's recruited to Laramie, Wyoming. And then he recruited, I mean, think about where he's been. He's been in Laramie, and then he was in Monroe, Louisiana. Those are two pretty different places. He was at Colorado State, you know, he's at Northern Colorado, he was at Montana State. So he's been at real, and TCU. So he's been at really disparate places. And that's very appealing to me, because he's had to recruit to Outposts. And you know what? I'd consider Lincoln an outpost.
Yeah.
So that I like that part of it.
What's next for Nebraska's defense? I mean, with all the different guys that they've brought in that assumingly will make immediate impacts, or if not be in competition to do so, where does this thing kind of go after turning over from last year a little bit?
Well, it's got to, first of all, what I'd say is it needs to stay where it is in terms of production. I mean, it can't. You know, you want it to keep climbing, actually. 36 nationally is good. And it was, I was struck half the other day, one of the news reports about Eric Shenander's raise, which is fine. I mean, I don't disagree with the raise, but, you know, what you tend to read is some justification for it. You know, it's kind of incumbent on the reporter to do that.
Sure.
And it was kind of interesting because one of the reasons for the raise as portrayed in this article was that the defense was 36th nationally. Now, that used to, at Nebraska, that used to be a crisis, you know. And I know I'm old. I covered the program at a time when it was thriving. I'm always struck by how kind of the standards, it seemed like they dropped. Just organically, nobody's fault. It's just happened over time. But if you're as old as I am, which hardly anybody is, you remember when 36 was a problem. Okay. So I think you hope that defense keeps getting better. And I would say, where you really need to watch it right now is secondary. I mean, if you're talking about, you know, we talk a lot about how well Nebraska's handled the portal and they fortified the roster at critical positions, which they certainly have. But if you're looking at the spots where you're still pretty concerned, I'd say one is the offensive line and two is the secondary. So you're returning Quentin Newsome back there, who's really good, and Miles Farmer, who's a good player at safety. But other than that, you got some holes to fill now. So we'll see what that looks like.
The standard thing that you mentioned, I mean, isn't that kind of about more where they came from and their progression over a 4-year time period, you know, than
sure.
anything else?
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, that's fair. No doubt about it. I think that is. Yeah, I'm glad you said that. But I would still say they need to keep climbing. You know, 36, it's fine. They didn't play championship defense is what I'm getting at. They didn't. They played it at times. But
yeah.
I would say as the season went on, run defense got kind of leaky. I think the Big Ten kind of grind took its toll. Nebraska was playing some guys that were hurt. Like you have to do. Depth wasn't probably exactly where you need it to be. This isn't to be critical or even to question that race. I think Eric clearly deserves it. But they weren't, come on, Matt. I'm looking for a championship defense.
Sure.
And that's not, you didn't see that.
No, I mean, that brings in the question of how much are you leaning on the defense and all that stuff as well. I'm still really curious to see how, and I've asked a few people this week, just like what that kind of puzzle looks like. How much are you, how good do you think the defense is going to be? Therefore, how much are you going to lean on it? Same thing with the offensive side. There's just so many question marks. And it doesn't feel like spring ball will provide that good of an answer for us, but it's certainly one of the more, I feel like we say this every year, Simple. It's one of the more intriguing ones that I can remember.
Yeah, definitely more intriguing than most I've encountered. Now, there's been some. I mean, when Bill Callahan took over, obviously that was really incredibly intriguing. He opened up every practice mm-hmm. in the spring. So you could you could watch it materialize. Now, some of the intrigue this spring will be on what we don't see, and I don't imagine we'll see hardly anything, right, as a media core, because, you know, Scott's not going to want to show his hand, and I totally understand that. With Whipple, now it's possible Scott could do a reversal on us and say, I don't care, watch what you want. You guys don't know what you're watching anyway. I doubt he'd do that, but, you know, I'd anticipate that the spring game will be very vanilla on the offensive side. But, yeah, I totally agree. Oh, God, yeah. I mean, think about it. I mean, we're talking about right now 16, 17 new players, transfers, and add in the recruits, the conventional recruits who will be on hand. And you're talking about 17 new players, which now you've been in springs where you've seen 8, 10, maybe 11, 12, but I've never seen 17.
Yeah.
So, from that standpoint, interesting.
How does Nebraska basketball pick up the pieces whenever they come out of the COVID pause that they're currently on? How do you kind of regroup and try and put something together over the last dozen or so games here?
I mean, that's a really hard question. I mean, the schedule is going to lighten up, which should help. It's hard to answer that. I don't know. I watch that team really closely. I watch it really closely, and I don't know. I mean, it's not going. There's no easy fix, Hap. I mean, there's just not an easy fix. They caught a break though. I hate to portray it that way. I mean, because you're talking about health of people, but, you know, you're looking at a 20-point loss at Ohio State, and Wisconsin is not, I don't know, that was going to be a bear. And now that game's on, but for now.
Yeah.
But it's Tuesday. I'll believe it when I see it when they're out there playing. So I think the best break is not playing right now at Ohio State. okay? That's a step in the right direction, all right? I mean, if we're just being real, that's a step in the right direction. They can regroup instead of, hey, man, they've been beat over the head a lot now. And a team can only take so much of that. You know what I'm talking about, 25-point losses, 27-point losses, 31-point losses, 35-point loss.
Yep.
You know, Purdue beat them by 27, Rutgers beat them by 30, on and on. And, hey, man, you only have so many of those kind of losses in you. And I think Ohio State was fixing to be that kind of game.
Do you think they have the man, I don't know how to put it, but do you think they have kind of, from the top, from the coaching staff, can they get them refocused and re-energized? Like, what's the sense that you get from the staff right now and how they're kind of approaching the last 12 games of the season, or however many it is?
Well, here's the thing about Fred. The good news with Fred, and this is something that goes through my mind a lot, probably goes through a lot of people's mind a lot. One thing that really helps is his even keel. You know, Fred, you can tell. Now, I feel for him as much as I can feel for somebody who's making that much money. I get it's eating him alive, probably. I mean, it has to be. I mean, losing, if I played you in ping pong 50 times and you beat me 42, it would begin to wear on me, all right? And we're not playing in front of 8,000, 10,000, 12,000 people watching us, you know, watching my livelihood play out before everybody's eyes.
Yeah, but I wouldn't let you forget it, though.
I know, but he's, you know, he's 5-41, and that is, I mean, and, you know, look at some of the losses. I mean, look at the teams he's lost to. I mean, that's one thing that gets overlooked. But anyway, his even keel definitely helps. And I think it gives his team its best chance. But I think as far as, like, what can he do with this team emotionally or mentally, I don't know. I mean, I point more toward – the issue to me is more what they've recruited, roster, you know, the way they've put together the roster, and then style of play. You know, he's tried to do it without a true big, you know, without real big, without that part of it. And people kind of sent warning shots early in his tenure, like, are you going to try to do this that way? And it's, you know, when you get into the Big Ten season, it becomes more glaring. It was certainly glaring against Trace Jackson Davis and Zach Edey, and it's been glaring. It's been glaring in other games, too. And those are the kind of things I look at more than they're at the team's emotional state. But man, when you keep getting clubbed, then yeah, you are talking about that emotional, mental grind too.
Well, exactly, and I'm with you from a big picture. Like, there's questions to answer about, you know, the roster and what it might look like going forward, or why it was kind of constructed this way. But also, I find myself, like, they go in and out of these kind of spurts of when things seem urgent or important, you know, and you know, you miss a shot on the offensive end and the defense lacks and they give up a bucket coming back on the other side. You know, like, that stuff has really been glaring to me this year. And, you know, there are bad teams around the country who still do that all the time. You know what I mean? That has to be kind of drilled into what they do.
It does. I kind of know what you're getting at. It's, I don't know, they're sort of interesting to me because they do play good teams pretty well at home a lot of the time, which is only mildly interesting to me. I mean, if that's what we're hanging our hat on now, that's pretty empty. They'll probably be able to get a couple wins, a few wins maybe. I still believe that. I still think they're good enough to beat some teams down the stretch. But now, how are we going to react if they're 4-16? Are we going to say, okay, everything's okay? I mean, that remains to be seen. I wouldn't be surprised if we do that, because the expectations for that program, I would describe as being incredibly low. And, you know, if he gets to 4-16, I feel like there's a lot of people, you're going to hear a lot. See, they're all right. They won four. I mean, so it's kind of unappealing. To me, it is. Now, maybe it's okay. Again, the expectations are incredibly low. It's hard to fathom how low they got. But there's, because I know that, because there's still people that dig in pretty hard and defend Fred. So all that tells me is the expectations have dipped to an incredibly low level.
I don't know. I mean, there has to be something, whether it's going to happen. I don't think that they're going to pay $18.5 million for Fred to not coach here next year. But even if that, you know, if they, when they don't, and if they don't, there's going to have to be some changes, right? Like there's going to have to be some movement similar to what has just happened with Scott Frost.
Yeah, it's a good point. I think so. Now,
like, I would not look at the situation and say, everything's fine, let's keep doing this for another year.
I don't think so. It's hard to fathom that. Now, I portray this as good news. Now, I don't know how other people would look at it, but Trev Alberts is good news in this equation, in this conversation, because he said last week or 2 weeks ago, whenever me and Parker talked to him, Parker Gabriel, that there has to be more emphasis. There has to be a more the conversation about winning has to be more prominent throughout the athletic department. He said that had been lacking. Okay. He's asking his coaches, when they do anything, ask yourself, is this elite?
Yep.
All right. Now, some of that people are going to be cynical about, say, that just sounds like a new boss and come in with a message. Oh, yeah, it is. That's what it is. But when you get a new boss, half that happens sometimes. The message does change, and everybody feels a little uncomfortable, which is good. It can be good, and I think in this case it is good. When I talk about expectations for the program, I'm not talking about Trev's expectations. I'm mainly talking about fan expectations. That the boss has high expectations. I don't know what he's going to do with that buyout. There's creative ways to handle that stuff, though.
Yeah,
and it can be handled. So,
well, they handled it with Frost.
I know this. I'd be pretty intense on getting the 6 wins. You know, and if you don't, then there might be some repercussions.
Interesting. Steve Sipple from the Lincoln Journal Star. All right, Sip, we'll let you go. Enjoy your weekend. You can let me know your thoughts on Ozark, because I'm sure you'll be dying to tell some people.
Well, nobody really cares what I think, but I just encourage people to watch it and and have a good weekend.
Steve Sipple here for Ozark. All right, man. Talk to you later. That's Steve Sipple from the Lincoln Journal Star. Ozark fan and Ozark representative at times even as well, urging people to watch it. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We will make our picks for the NFL coming up this weekend. How many road teams will win? 1, 2 more? Find out next on 1620 The Zone. But first, oh yeah, that's right. Each win means that much more in the NFL playoffs, especially those road wins. That's why FanDuel Sportsbook is hooking up new customers with 30-1 enhanced odds for the divisional playoff. That's right. Bet 5 to win $150 on any team to win any divisional playoff game. Oh, man. Who do you pick this weekend? Who's your most comfortable favorite, you ask? Mine would be the Tennessee Titans.
Oh, yeah!
Mine would be the Tennessee Titans. Just sign up for the FanDuel Sportsbook and make a deposit to claim your 30-1 enhanced odds. There's no better place to bet the NFL playoffs than on America's number one sportsbook. They have a very easy-to-use app, and they have bets laid out right there for you. You can go into those. You can go into the same game parlays as well. If you already have FanDuel Sportsbook, FanDuel is hooking up all customers with $50 when you refer a friend. Plus, your friend will get the $50 too. That's a sweet deal. Don't miss your chance to win $150 off a $5 bet when you use promo code HAPPER when signing up. HAPPER. Download the FanDuel Sportsbook app and use promo code HAPPER. And pick your divisional playoff team before kickoff. 21 plus, present in Iowa, new users only. $10 first deposit required. Must wager in designated offer market. Max bonus $150. Restrictions apply. See full terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-BETS-OFF.